So welcome to this week's episode of the podcast. This sounds really weird because actually this is just part two of a recording that we're already halfway through. And we're still here with Adam Gibbs.
Adam.
Right, start again. Sorry. Sorry,
Adam. No, leave it in. It's brilliant.
No.
It's all right.
You're spoiling the magic.
No, you can't
tell them we've already recorded.
No, it's all right. It'll be fine. Right, am I on now? Yeah, am I still on? Yeah. Dave, thumbs up if I'm on. Okay, so welcome to this episode of the podcast, and this is actually kind of part two of an episode that we recorded quite a while ago, although we haven't recorded it quite a while ago because we're still halfway through recording, if that makes sense. And we're still here anyway with Adam Gibbs. Now, I predict that this is going to go out sometime in mid to late May, right? So let's play a little game. Let's go round, everybody, and see if we can guess what the news, the big news story of this week is going to be. Right, so mid to late May, have a guess. You can go first, Darren.
In May?
Oh, you put me right on the spot now. What's the big news in May?
Meghan and Harry are getting divorced.
Right, that's one. Brilliant.
Meghan's been found out she's actually a man.
Who?
Who?
You know, Meghan, remember her?
Meghan is actually a man. Right.
Yeah, okay. Unbelievable. Yeah. I'll tell you what, I'm sick and tired of lockdown four, aren't you?
Well, hang on a minute. That's my headline, you cheating bastard. So I'm going for Britain enters lockdown four.
Oh, you know.
Due to Peruvian strain.
Well, I was going to say, we had to deal with the Canadian variant that came across in May.
That's right.
Yeah.
The Canadian variant that came across in early March.
What about you, Dave? What have you got?
I just got my award from Landscape Photographer of the Year. Thank you ever so much.
All right, man.
Well,
congrats.
Done, Dave.
Well done, man.
Amazing, because I didn't enter.
And it was all sky replaced in Luminar. So fantastic. Right, so let's get on with some topics, shall we? What should we talk about first? I think if you watched the last episode of us talking, which was quite a while ago now, you would know we were quite photography heavy. So I think we'll start this one with something a bit lighter. So this question is, and I don't know who asked this question, I don't know who came up with it, but if you met God, assuming he exists, let's assume he exists, what would you ask him? What would be the first thing you would ask God if you met him? And anyone can go, I don't care, just throw it out there.
Why?
Well, I would ask him, why wasn't I born rich instead of handsome? That would be definitely the first question I would ask. But do you know what, I'm assuming now, you know, you float up through the clouds and you come to the old pearly gates. And they said, right, you go through the gates into heaven. Do you know what I'd be really concerned about? Is it boring in heaven? Because heaven, they don't seem boring to me. I mean, I don't know how you picture heaven, but...
You prefer hell. There's not more going on in hell,
well,
isn't there?
Well,
another flame.
Well, what do you do in heaven for eternity?
You play the harp.
Float.
That's fine if you can play the harp.
You'd automatically know how to play, surely.
Yeah. Oh, you would you?
I would have thought so, yeah.
Float on a cloud.
Right.
So you wouldn't need a drone. You could fly around with your camera, couldn't you?
Yeah, in the cloud.
And me harp.
DJI cloud.
You could just float around and annoy people.
I'd do that anyway.
Yeah, we could do it more. Because they wouldn't be able to see you, so you'd better annoy them even more.
I'd have a question for him. I'd have a question.
Go on, Dave.
Listen to you, matey boy. War, pestilence, plague, famine, what the fuck?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cancer.
Coronavirus.
What's that all about? Yeah. What were you thinking?
So you know when you said, oh, we was a bit photography heavy on the last podcast, so we're going to start with something a bit lighter. wasn't exactly... cancer is not, you know, kind of a light-hearted subject. War... Yeah.
Mild cancer.
Oh, well, that's right then.
But all of those things, you can't blame God for those. All we can blame is ourselves.
Oh, he's getting deep. He's getting deep.
But God would say that, wouldn't he? Or she?
Well, he's got an answer for everything, hasn't he, though?
Yeah. Or she.
Yeah, she.
Just put it out there.
Less about Meghan.
Yeah. I'm not sure what I'd ask. I'd probably ask, what am I doing here? Probably. How did I get here?
Yeah.
I think we'd all ask that question. If we all died before
what's Gary
you,
doing here?
And, yeah. And there was a ring at the gate and it was like,
we invited him in. Like, Gary, you head south, mate, not north, south.
Can you imagine though, if you did, you arrived at the pearly gate and the gates opened only for God to appear, and it was God with a face of Mally. Oh, how scary would that be? You've got to ask, is there a different option? Yeah. Can I go somewhere else?
Yeah.
Right there is your thumbnail idea.
Yeah. Can you imagine eternity with Mally?
Oh.
Hang on, wasn't that podcast 40? That felt like eternity with Mally. I imagine if you turn up to the pearly gates and God comes out and goes, you know, get off my land. Even worse, he's Welsh. He's Welsh and he's like, you're not coming in here, you're English. Get out. Get out, you're English. Sod off. You can't.
I've been growing this beard for a reason, you know.
Oh, really? Is there something you want to
tell us? It does look quite biblical.
Did you cause the storm that washed away your jetty?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we killed that conversation. That was a great start to this week. Brilliant. Well done. So, all right, let's move on then and actually talk about some photography, shall we? Seeing as you know, we've only, I know. This is a good question, though. This is genuinely a good question, and I'm really sorry, but I didn't write down who asked it. It was someone in one of the comments, and it's relating to woodland, and he says, is the struggle with woodland photography shot composition or post-processing? And I think that's quite interesting because I think a lot, more than any other genre that I've taken, you know, that I've had anything to do with, post-processing is more key in woodland than any other for me.
Oof.
I think so, anyway.
Ooh, no.
Getting, because...
Ooh, no, I don't agree with that. I think the positioning of all the woodland trees is so important. If you mess that up, then you've nothing to work on. No, I don't agree with that.
I didn't say that post processing was more important than composition. What I said was out of all of the subjects or genres that I've done, post processing is the most important for me in woodland photography. Getting it right.
Why?
Because it's really easy to mess up a woodland shot with your post-processing. You can kind of, other genres, I feel you can kind of get away with maybe doing things that are a bit quirky or pushing stuff that maybe you shouldn't push quite so far. But I think with woodland, there's a point where you hit a point, and then it's ruined. The shot's completely ruined just by moving, you know, one slider slightly too much, I find, with woodland much more than other genres.
Mm. Yeah, you can easily overdo a woodland shot,
yeah,
post-processing. Mm. But surely woodland is more about composition. It's more about, because there's so much going on, it's more about actually making the scene work, making the scene compositionally work, using the trees in the right position, making sure you've got the gaps and the leading lines and whatever it is. But it's all about... it's all about taking your time with composition because it's so much more difficult than it is in a normal environment because you've got so much going on. So sure, it's got to be composition rather than post-processing is the most important thing.
I like the way Simon Baxter approaches his woodland. He sees them as like characters, and then how one character will interact with another character. So try to look at the subject rather than just trees. Look at them as shapes and how they interact with other shapes around them. I think one of the problems a lot of people have is that they're out to find a specific tree or situation, whereas I think that maybe if you can do what Simon's doing is not just look at one tree but look at the whole scene and all those interactions within that scene. I generally, personally, I look for things like light, what the light is doing. And most of the time around here on the island, I mean, the light is pretty piss poor. It's flat and not terribly interesting. So I'll just look for little nuances in the light. And then when it comes to processing, then just exaggerate those nuances so that you cr- create that depth, you know. But
well, on your last video, Adam, which would have come, well, I'll say your last video, the last video that I watched of yours, which came out roughly about, I don't know, what's today's date? So about the 10th of March.
Oh, yeah, it was ages ago. I can remember.
It was ages ago. But actually, it wasn't a photo that you actually took, but it was your ending, your outro, when you done a piece to camera, obviously before the video ended. And I was looking at, you know, the vista of it. And I thought that would have made a cracking photo.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because I noticed that as well. I thought, damn, why the hell didn't I take it?
And there was a broken branch just at the bottom.
Just get rid of that, move it out of the way. Move over to the left just a little bit. Everything fell into place.
It did. Everything about it. I thought, oh, that's a cracker. And I was hoping, actually, that when you finished, that picture was actually going to come up. But I was a bit disappointed that you didn't.
Oh.
But it's funny because I
subscribe.
But I'm actually going to go back. Actually, no, I did. Sorry, I did go back.
Yeah, that was a cracking video. I loved it.
Lessons learned. That was called, wasn't it? Yeah.
The return. Yeah.
Yeah, and that photo was amazing, Adam. Where did you get your inspiration from?
Some Cockney geezer.
It's a shame because so right now the logging roads into that area, there's a bunch of blockades. There's three blockades. They're trying to stop a company called Teal Jones from logging that area. But Teal Jones have gone out and they've got a court injunction to get rid of these protesters. So I want to get in there before they start arresting people, because I'm not sure if they're going to log that area where I was or not. But I want to get back in there and take some more images before they do log it, because there's so much potential in there, you know. It's a real shame. But yeah, no, I noticed that composition. Yeah. I thought, oh yeah, that looks really good. Would have made a nice panel.
But Jamie and I,
it did make a nice panel.
Commented on it did make a nice panel. But Jamie and I have actually mentioned this before. Sometimes when we're shooting ourselves or just some B-roll, and you just kind of almost like plonk the vlogging camera down, and as you're just looking at it, you think, actually, that will make like a really nice shot. And it's you didn't search for it; it was just it was all by chance.
No, it's skill where you put the vlogging camera. That's what it is. It was there all along.
That's it, mate.
It's a B-roll skill.
But so sometimes your choice of the composition for a B-roll is often equal as important as a photograph, though.
Absolutely. Yeah. This is what I was going to say. Yeah. You know, composition in videography is as important as composition in photography. And the better videographers, the better landscape photography vlogging videographers, if you like, are the ones who know how to compose their videos as well as they compose their images, you know? And you often find that the better ones do tend to find those compositions that you go, why didn't you take that shot, you know?
I mean, I'm not a lover of woodland, personally taking woodland. I do appreciate woodland photography, but I think for me, I do love the way Owen Clark takes woodland shots. You know, he takes the saturation down on his photos, and they're just really subtle, really soft. And I must admit, I could look at his woodland all day.
I think I can compare woodland for me to sort of learning a guitar. So I'm not a brilliant guitarist, equally not a brilliant woodland photographer, but I remember trying to play the guitar, and you're sitting there like trying to, I don't know, play a particular song, and you can't get it, and you can't get it, and you can't get it, and you just can't see it, you can't work it out, and then suddenly it clicks and you can play it, and then suddenly you can play another song. And I think woodland photography is really similar to that. It's like, if you can't, you need to, what Adam was saying with light is key. I think sometimes it's good just to wander through the wood and not even look for a shot, just suddenly a flash of light or something would take you, and then normally when you look over there, there's a shot because it's the light that's there. But I think there's a thing you can suddenly see the woodland, you can suddenly see the shots in the woodland, so you're no longer looking for trees or looking for that, you're looking for compositions, and you can just sort of see it. And I think that just takes a bit of practice, because I think that this year, being in lockdown, I know with you, Jamie, definitely I would say that's come out in you. And I feel that's come out in me, that you kind of see more now.
Yeah. You do.
It's like anything, you just got to practice, just got to keep going out there and keep taking photographs, you know.
But I think you're absolutely right, Gary. I think there is that light bulb moment with Woodland where, it, first of all, you think it's just so much going on and how the hell am I going to create a photograph out of this? And then you start to hone in. And I started, when I started using the telephoto, just trying to go in a bit closer to scenes rather than, you know, look at the mess that's going on, just try and pick out elements. And then once you've done that, you start to see scenes within scenes. And then you can go back and actually say, actually, there's a... There was the shot there that I took close up, but actually if I come out a bit more, then I can introduce that tree over here or that fern over there and actually make it a wider scene. So you start to just develop your skill by just practicing more and more and more and learning more of what you can do. Because the great thing about woodland is there's so much there to shoot, you know, and you can be like you do, Adam. You can go in really tight with some nature shots and really pick out some detail within the floor or the bark or whatever, or you can take the wider shots and panos that, you know, that pano that you did, Gary, not long back. You know, you've got the ability to do so much scope within woodland. And I think the more you practice, the more you just pick up on those sort of fine-tuning elements where you just think, actually, just I've learnt now that I can just introduce that bit extra into my photography by just taking my time and just fine-tuning the scene a bit more.
I think you've hit the nail on the head when it comes to time. I think that's the thing that most people are lacking, is that let's face it, most people, they're doing it for a hobby. They don't have the time to spend that I do in any area. And that's the one thing that really helps me, is that I'm able to spend a lot of time in just a very small area. And let's face it, if you spend enough time in any area, eventually you'll get something that's really good. Mm-hmm. And that's why I keep going back to the same areas over and over again. It's just, if you have the time, then spend the time and you will get it. But if you're working 9 to 5 and you only get out every other weekend, then most people don't have that
but
time.
But I think a lot of people in lockdown, certainly here in the UK, have spent a lot of time in the local woodland because it's the only place they could go, you know, and therefore they've got used to it. And you know, I was watching, Ian Worth's video back in whenever it was when we shot this this podcast.
Ages ago.
And he said that he'd spent so much time in one particular woodland that he knows all of the trees more or less and all the compositions. And he spotted one that he took one way and all of a sudden he walked around the opposite side of it and he hadn't thought about doing that before. And there was another shot there. In actual fact, he preferred that than the other one. So once you get to know the woodland or the area, in all seasons, because obviously it changes so much within season when you've got, you know, the colour of the spring and then you've got the greens of the summer and then the browns of the autumn and then the contrasting colours of winter. You know, it's got so much opportunity throughout the year. And I think if you've got an area of woodland that you can really just concentrate on, it's a project in itself, isn't it? And you can just spend as much time as you want and compositions will come.
Yeah. I mean, it's not everybody's cup of tea. One of the only reasons why I photograph so many trees is because that's what we have on the island. It's either trees or waterfalls and coastline, which is a nice coastline, but it doesn't necessarily...
My heart bleeds for you. It must be...
It's not my choice, that, is it, really? Yeah.
We've got
I mean, we have mountains, but they're a little bit harder to get up.
Mountains as well.
Oh, yeah.
You're late, popping in.
Whales, you know, breaching in the background. Yeah. Bald eagles, hundreds of them.
Pterodactyls.
So there's just hundreds of bald eagles out on the coast right now. Seals, whales, I mean, everybody's out there. This is the last year that the fishermen will be able to fish. They're banning any kind of fishing for herring. But it's just a smorgasbord out there right now. So I should really be out there photographing wildlife. But instead, I'm sitting here in a dark room.
Yeah, well, we've got starlings. We've got blue tits. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we'll raise you with your wildlife.
I had a magpie the other day.
Magpie, yeah. Yeah.
Just in fact, we've got golden eagle prey. Food.
Actually, I think the UK has more bird species than we do.
Yeah.
Hmm.
just not as big and attractive.
Yeah.
You know, I'd love to capture a golden eagle. I bet that'd be amazing. That would be absolutely amazing.
Yeah, I don't know if we get them on the... I guess we get them on the island. I can't say that I've seen them. We get vultures, turkey vultures. We get a lot of those in the summer.
Yeah, that's cool. We've got a lot of red kites in my village.
So I saw a red kite today driving home, and they're beautiful-looking birds.
Really? They can drive?
I don't get that joke.
You said you saw a red kite driving home.
You said you saw a red kite driving
home. Oh, sorry. Yeah.
If you have to explain it, it's never a good joke. Never a good joke. So woodland, anyways, I think we covered that. Composition, not processing so much, but a little bit of processing. Good processing is important, I would say. Right.
Well, yeah. I was just going to say, Adam, you use it to good effect, don't you? When you darken your shadows and you use selective lightening of the scenes as well, don't you?
Very
localised adjustments.
Yeah, that's where luminosity masks come in really handy if you know how to use them. I just use the basic. You can buy a plugin for Photoshop and it's pretty easy to use. But I find it really handy. I just go on the principle of, well, if I don't like that part, darken it, and if I like that part, lighten it. If you want to draw people to a certain area, then lighten it, and it seems to work for me.
That's a good point, actually. I think with woodland is you can really use that well to hide messy areas, draw people's eye away from that mess. So darken that off, lighten up the area you want people to focus on. Yeah, that is important. But I think as well, I don't know. I find that, like you said with Owen, desaturation is sometimes quite nice, but also decontrasting. So you soften everything down, especially if you've got a bit of mist in the scene. Don't punch it too hard. Just soften it down. A little bit of texture, but not clarity really.
Keep the shadows open.
So moving on, we've got a topic here that's one that James asked, and I think we need to just tweak it slightly. James said, "Was there a pivotal moment in your life where you wish you took the other direction?" And I want to throw in here as well to say, or was there a pivotal moment in your life that's pushed you in the direction that you're in now? Yeah. So has anybody got anything? I mean, James, you mentioned it, so there must be something on your mind.
I just thought of a decent question. Yeah. I've got no answer for it. Do you know what? I was thinking back. Back in 1994, I used to work for my father's business, successful insurance business. And he sold the business because around that time, that's where Direct Line came in. It was hard to compete. We had the opportunity for the buyers who bought my dad's business to employ the staff as well, including myself. And I would have been in a senior position. I chose not to, though. I chose to go to Tenerife and work there for 6 months to basically be a bum, to be a timeshare, to get people into clubs, and was pretty damn good at it. But it was a bit of a debauchery lifestyle, to say the least. And then got kicked out of there at 6 months, and then I started a job on the motorways.
Hang on. Why'd you get kicked out? I'm dying. What?
Basically, all my mates were leaving. It got very dicey. And at the time, you're only allowed 6 months on your passport.
Oh, okay.
Before the police slowly came round and ran everyone up. So I thought about time to go. So the thing is, if I'd stopped, or if I continued with my insurance career, would I now in a different position than what I would if I'd opted to go to Tenerife? But it's funny because it all comes round. 3 years later, I went back into the insurance business. So a big cycle, really. I think the question is, would I be in a higher management position than what I am now, perhaps? I don't know.
Would you want to be, though?
Would I want to be?
Yeah.
Because looking back, I'm really glad I did that and got it out of my system, that I did go to Tenerife.
Yeah.
And it's quite an experience. a good life-changing experience. You build up confidence that way. Would I be the person I am now? Some may argue it's not quite good, but there you go. But, you know, you never know. It's a question.
Well, that's the point.
It's quite, yeah, it's really difficult to look back. I mean, I remember when I was 18 and me and a friend of mine was going to go to Australia for a year. And we filled out kind of all the visas. All the visas were kind of ready to go. I remember going to Australia House and queuing up and getting all the forms. And we had to save up £2,000 before we could actually apply for our visa and show these funds. And we pretty much saved for best part of a year to get this £2,000 together. And I was actually working away from home. I was doing kind of night work and working 7 days a week. And whilst I was away, right at the end, I'd managed to get this £2,000 together. And I couldn't wait to get back to my friend to say, right, you know, I've got my money. And and when I kind of got back to the area that I lived in, I bumped into another friend, and I won't mention the friend that I was going with. Let's just call him John. And they said, oh, have you seen John's new car? And I said, what new car? And I went straight round his house, and the £2,000 that he had saved, he decided that he just wanted a new car instead. And I was only 18, and I was just not confident enough to kind of go all that way on my own. And another friend, he said he would go with me, but he needed 6 months to save the money. And I was devastated because I thought, oh, I just can't put myself through that again. I need to be let down. So it wasn't a pivotal moment that kind of changed my life, but I often look, but I don't have many regrets in life, but I just always look back and think, well, you know,
what direction would you have taken?
Exactly.
Australia,
but,
yeah.
But I've had a really good life. So if I would have gone to Australia, I would have been with Helen, I would have had the family, probably wouldn't even meet you guys. You know, I'd have had a totally different life. So it's, unless you've had a real crap life, it's very difficult to look back, I suppose, and regret anything.
Mm. I'll tell you what's really weird, you saying that, and I hadn't even thought of that when I was thinking about this topic, but when I was about 9, my dad actually was, we were emigrating to Australia. Right. And we went through the whole process, and like you said, he went to Australia House, got all the forms, we had medicals, and all of this, and I remember having my medical and going back into school and sort of saying to my friends, you know, we're going to Australia, we're moving to Australia. And then apparently, and I'm not sure what to believe really, but apparently my brother failed the medical. This is what my dad said. So we never went. And I've lost contact with my dad. I haven't spoken to him for 25 years. But turns out, I never knew this, turns out that my, so I lived with my grandparents when I was younger. Turns out that they were, my dad was adopted. He was actually an Australian, you know, back in the 40s when a lot of kids were sent over to the UK from Australia. Well, he was sent over to the UK from Australia and was adopted by my grandparents. So my grandparents weren't even really my grandparents. I had no idea. And I only found this out sort of 15 years ago or so. So, yeah, I mean, God knows what would have happened if we'd have ended up moving to Australia. I mean, that would have been a completely different life for me.
Absolutely, so, yeah.
But then, like
I had a pivotal thing that happened that was pretty significant. I came home from school and my folks had moved house. And
and they told you? The keys under the pot?
They moved house before I'd finished A-levels. I was still in the sixth form. I had about 9 months still to go. And so they sorted me out. I got a flat, and so I did the last sort of 6-9 months in school as an independent adult, even though I was only 17 at the time. Wow. But I had to get myself out of bed, make my breakfast, go to school, do my laundry and all
poor,
that sort of thing.
Poor guy.
But what happened was, because they'd moved all the way up to Scotland, they just assumed at the end of school, I phoned my mum and said, right, that's it, finish my A-levels. She said, okay then. He's expecting me to be on the next train to Scotland, and you know the money is going to stop next week. We're not sending you rent money or food money. So I stayed where I was and got a job. And sort of, you know, 6-8 weeks later, instead of going to university, I had a taste of independent life with an income. And I thought, oh, yeah, this is I'm enjoying this. So I never went to university for that reason.
Mm.
Because, you know, had I gone and lived with my folks, the next natural phase would have been to go to university. Mm. And I instead ended up down in Pembrokeshire and took up photography. And I must admit, over the years, it's come up and they've said, oh, you should have gone to university. And I was going to do natural sciences. And I had an aunt who was in that field professionally. And I she said to me once, I was about 15 years old, and she said, what are you going to do? And I said, oh, I want to do marine biology or something like that. She said, oh, don't bother, there's no money in it. And we were out for a meal probably only a couple of years ago, and I reminded her of this. And she said, oh, bloody hell, you know. I said, oh, that was really sound advice. I took you up on it. And she was a bit worried. I said, no, it's fine, because, you know, I've had a great life. I you know, all these businesses and done well out of it. And if I'd gone into that academic side of things, I just think now I would probably not consider it to be as worthwhile as it has been. I've had a great time, really enjoyed myself. Mm. So that decision really did change the path of an entire career.
Mm. I'm a great believer for what will be, you know, and I think we do choose paths that end up taking us where we were probably going to end up. Yeah, it's interesting when you think back about times that could have changed or would have or did change the direction of your life. You know, a bit similar to sort of James when he was saying that I lived in the middle of nowhere. My parents lived in the heart of the Cambridgeshire Fens, and it is literally in the middle of nowhere. And it's a village, and there's hardly any people that live there. But you know, I was brought up with a very small community of people, and generally people didn't tend to leave the Fens. They tended to, you know, they lived off the land. So, you know, the land was the business in the Fens, and my parents were both land, you know, they farmed and they had small holding, and, you know, generally that's the industry. It was farming and arable. And there's an expectation that you probably go on and carry on from your father. So if your father was working on the land, then you'd sort of take up and do the same thing. And I decided I didn't want that because, you know, I'm actually an only child, and I spent a lot of time helping my parents on the land, and I found out what bloody hard work it was. And I thought, I don't really want to spend the rest of my life putting my back out and putting so much effort into for limited return. So I decided to leave home and went to the big metropolis that was Peterborough, that Gary knows very well.
Skyscraper.
But that point to me, you know, Peterborough was a massive city. You know, literally, I was living in the middle of nowhere, and Peterborough was this huge city.
I was literally going to say, Jamie, I was going to say to you, how did you explain the six fingers when you moved out? But then, to be fair, you moved to Peterborough, so I had to have
the operation and cut them off, so I fitted in. Yeah,
well, moving to Peterborough, you wouldn't have needed to, would you? Because we're all like that anyway. So.
Yeah. But and that was the big change in my life. I moved to Peterborough and started to work for an insurance company, funnily enough, same as James. And, you know, that working in a corporate environment, working in a city, you know, the whole change of environment was completely different. And from then on, I met my wife at the insurance company, and obviously we've gone out of kids, and you know, you just get through, you go into then life, and it just happens in stages. And I've fell into various things over the term of my career. I've done okay. I've got great kids, and I enjoy what I'm doing. And I think that if I'd have decided to stay in the Fens, then I think my life would have been completely different now. Not that I don't enjoy going back, and I've got so much respect for the place because it's where my heart is. But you know, I think that turning point was when I decided just to up sticks and leave what was the heart of the Fens and try city life, as it was, although Peterborough is not, you know, a big metropolis. But and it was a huge turning point for me, I suppose, when you think back, because if I didn't do that, then I could probably still be, you know, working the land somewhere in the middle of the Fens with a bad back.
Yeah.
I wonder what it would have been like for you, Adam, if you'd have stayed in Bletchley, you know, because it's...
Ooh, yeah. Most of my friends, there weren't any job prospects at that time, so they ended up joining the army and fighting in Northern Ireland. I don't know. I don't really have any regrets, that's for sure. The only regret I do have is that I got married. And probably one of the hardest decisions that I ever made. And probably
does your wife know that? Is your wife listening to this one?
I don't care. Because she... I had a horrible divorce and I went through a really hard time. But that's the only regret that I have. Probably one of the best things that I ever did, and I really wish that I'd done it a long time ago, was start my YouTube channel. I was going through a bit of a hard time when the magazine that I worked for went bankrupt, because I'd worked for them for so long, you know, and when you get so used to doing the same thing that, and of course all my eggs were all in one basket, and suddenly it was all gone, and I was like, oh man, now what the hell am I going to do? Because, you know, I don't really have any formal education other than photography, so, you know, what am I going to do? And so that's when I started the YouTube channel, and it's worked out brilliantly. I just wish I'd done it a long time ago or sooner. But, you know, I don't have any regrets or anything. I mean, my life is kind of, I've always done things for myself. I'm a bit selfish. When I was in my younger days, I climbed for about 10 years full time. I didn't really have a regular job. I was always on the belief that, you know, have fun now and worry about it later, you know.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I'm still doing that.
And then I got into photography when I got married. Photography is probably not the best thing to get into to make money, but I've always worked for myself, and probably the biggest pivotal moment for me was when I was a kid, when I joined the Boy Scouts in the UK. That was probably the best thing that ever happened to me. We had such a great troop, and of course all my school friends joined as well, and we had so much fun, and that's where I was introduced to the outdoors. And, you know, that's always, even stuck in the middle of Bletchley, you know, we'd go up to the lakes or Wales or wherever. We had good leaders, and that really stuck with me all these years. And that's why I enjoy the outdoors now, is because of that. Because my parents aren't into it at all. Mm. So, thank the Scouts for that, for sure.
Yeah, that's a good point, actually, because my parents, from what I can really remember, my parents kind of got divorced when I was quite young, but I don't ever remember my dad or certainly when I was living with my mum, they was never really kind of outdoor people, you know, so I don't quite know where I get my love of being outside and my love of nature from, you know, because it certainly wasn't. You know, you have a lot of people that can recall stories. You know, when I used to go out with my father or my granddad and we would do this together and they would show me. I never had none of that, actually. So, and my brother and my sister, they're not really kind of big outdoor people. So
no, mine neither.
No.
It's funny because when I first got into outdoor activities, I wasn't really into nature at all. It was more for the activity, like climbing or you know, kayaking or whatever. But it wasn't until I actually got into photography where I started to appreciate the natural history aspect of it more and more, to the point where I actually enjoy that more than the photography. You know, it's funny how things turn around.
Yeah.
Did you get into photography via your climbing? Did you used to go out climbing and think, God, that's a fantastic view, I wish I'd got a camera?
Well, I was very much into climbing, and then it got to the point where I was teaching climbing, and that's probably one of the worst things you can do, because you just get sick and tired of climbing. It's kind of like photography. If you turn photography as a hobby into a profession, all of a sudden you have to make money, and it kind of takes it away from the enjoyment of photography. So with the photography, I set it up in such a way that I had my magazine work that I did for a living, but then the nature photography was a hobby. I didn't really pursue it to make money. And the way I got into it, I kind of got out of climbing, and then I, of course, I met someone and we got married, and it's kind of at odds with what I was going to do next. So my wife at that time suggested that I enjoyed photography. Why not go back to college and take up photography? And that's what I did, with the intention of working in a studio. And I worked in a studio for maybe 2 weeks. I just hate it. I hated it. Kind of like wedding photography, you know. I thought, well, just because it's photography doesn't make it enjoyable. So that's when I started getting into the garden stuff, because it was close to nature photography, but you could actually make a living out of it, you know.
Yeah.
I must admit, yeah. I spent today, this afternoon, processing images from a commercial shoot. At the end of it, I wanted to hang myself. It wasn't a very interesting shoot. It was a funeral home, but, you know.
Yeah.
What do you
yeah.
take? What pictures do you take?
From hearses, mostly, and a chapel yeah. of rest and bunches of flowers.
And you didn't find that interesting? That's quite surprising.
No. I must admit,
you can't really put filters on that, can you?
I'm not going to tell anybody, but I just did one treatment on one image and then just bloody synced it across a lot of them and thought that.
Well, I was going to say, you've got to be quite careful with that, haven't you? Where you process, you know, moody black and whites.
Death presets.
Dave's death presets.
$3.99 for 10.
I thought the teal and orange look in the hearse was quite good.
Yeah, nice glow.
Did you get one of those little prisms just to, you know, give a little bit of interest when you're taking a picture inside the coffin? You know.
Oh, but no, I'm totally, you know, because I don't do it very often. It was for some web work, but I said I would take the pictures. And when it's got absolutely nothing to do with what you're interested in, it is just a chore. It's nothing more than a chore.
Mm-hmm. It's like when I stopped the magazine stuff, of course my parents, you know, they, oh, you should just get into weddings. Why would I do that? I mean, I'd rather work at McDonald's.
Yeah. I can't think of anything I'd rather do less than do a wedding. I really.
Oh, I did it. I did a fair God. Few. I
did you, James? I never knew you did that.
Oh, yeah, I did. Good money.
Yeah, I can understand why people do it, because of the money. But I think you'd be the last person that I thought would do a wedding.
Well, do you get over there? What are you doing there? Exactly. I tell you that. You've been on there.
Well, the thing is, like, I have my friend Jeremy, who I go on trips on quite a bit. He has a regular job, but his wife, she has a regular job too. They're both professors, but she also does wedding photography full time. But the difference is that she really enjoys it, or did enjoy it. So she's really good at it because she enjoys what she does, and that's the big difference, you know. And
lots of people. You've got to like people.
Yeah, and plus you have to take control, because otherwise they'll take control of you and then you won't get what you want. And I'm not very good at that. I'm not very good at dealing with anybody, especially at a wedding. I can only imagine dealing with brides and their mothers. Oh, I mean, it's just, you know.
I'm sorry, but there's a sitcom in James as a wedding photographer.
There is
a series.
Yeah,
I'd come and film that for you.
I can put some scenes together. Not a problem.
Did you wear your hat when you?
No, then.
You could do like the
wedding bastard.
Bugger off, brides. I was going to ask you, Adam. Were you a keen gardener? Did you have an interest in gardening?
No, but my partner Karen, she's right into it. She's very much into it. And actually, she's quite funny because she's always busy doing something, projects. And she has a regular job, but she decided to get a part-time job at a garden center so that she could get the discount to buy the plants, you know, so you get a big discount,
good
right?
Thinking.
Because she was buying...
Is she a Yorkshire woman?
No, she's... Well, her mum and dad were German, but she's Canadian. But she's funny because she was their best customer, even though she worked at the... She's their best customer. Yeah. I thought, oh, my God, how many thousands of dollars have you spent on plants, you know? Like she's coming over tomorrow over to the island. I bet she'll have a truck full of plants in the back, I bet you. She's always, and they just sit there waiting to be planted, you know.
Yeah.
Everybody's got to have a hobby. Yeah.
You're a gardener, aren't you, James?
I love my garden, yeah. I love my garden.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to spring, some wildflower, shallow depth of field stuff. Yeah, I love it. I'm just redesigning my garden as we speak to us. Landscaping.
I love photographing gardens. I'm not really a gardener. I used to know all the Latin names, but that's kind of faded. But I can appreciate a good garden for sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What were you saying, Darren? You were going to say something? Sorry, mate.
No, Helen's very similar. She loves being out in the garden. And she actually said the other day, she said, oh, I'd really like to get a job at a garden centre.
Yeah.
Just to, you know, yeah. I think
we have one really right like across that. The road here, a little one. So
the commute's a bit far, mate, I think, at the moment.
Just walk across the road.
I tried to plant some. I'm the worst gardener in the world, by the way. I tried to plant some stuff. I've got out in my garden. It's basically patio, gravel, and then
you know
some,
we've seen it.
Some, yeah,
we've
some
seen
trees.
It.
Well, the box. We know it well. The box at the back, which is where I've got the bird stuff. You know the thing. I tried to plant some wildflower things in there last summer, and literally I just got a bed of weeds. That was it.
Is that the Latin name? Wildflower thingos.
Yeah, that's it, yeah. What, yeah. Yeah. But I thought that would look great. It'll be all different colours and beautiful. Like, literally, it was just different shades of green weed. So I've had to pull all them out. So, yeah, I'm not the best gardener, I'm afraid.
Think of all the birds that would have attracted, though, if you'd have got it right. All those wildflowers in the sea.
Exactly. Oh, yeah. That's exactly what I was doing it for. But then I did have a thought that it might attract the cats because they could hide in the tall grass and...
Yeah.
And kill the birds. So,
oh, good bit of good news. Our fox came back last night. Oh, she's been gone for.
Is that good news?
It's really good news.
Oh, well, all right.
Last night, though, do you? You mean a few months ago?
Yeah.
Yes. Our fox came back in
How
March.
How are the cubs doing? Are the cubs all right?
No, we was really worried because she had like two cubs last year, so there was three that used to come into the garden every single night, and then all of a sudden they just stopped coming, and we were just a bit kind of concerned because we have seen a few kind of dead foxes on the road, and we just thought, oh, you know, not that it's one of ours, but it you know, it things like that can happen. And
it's a decent meal,
and not
it
for
was
us.
Those blokes in red jackets galloping through the yard that did it probably.
Oh, no, yeah.
I tell you what, Dave, Darren's garden's big enough that you could probably have a hunt in it.
Yeah.
Do you have like a farm or something? Do you live out in the country?
No. Oh, me? No. My garden. Just
a manor park.
Yeah.
No.
Just a small national park. what have you got at the end? A summer house.
A lake.
And a lake. Observatory.
Yeah. Nice. <lake. laughs>
It is actually. I loved it when Darren did the his very first bird video, and he was said, right, this is how I'm going to set up a hide. I'm going to set it up in my
observatory.
In my pergola. I'm going to set it up there. But I just need some wood. Like, off he pops, like huge woodshed. Like, literally, like, it was like B&Q. It was like, I've got my own B&Q here. I'm going to have this wood and this wood, and I'm just going to go and get my tools. Whacking great shed out come all these tools. I mean, I know you are a carpenter, so probably understandable, but yeah, it was brilliant watching that. And I'm like, right, I'm going to copy Darren. I'm going to do exactly what he does. Right, I need some wood.
Pop over the motorway.
Yeah, bollocks, I'll just stop.
Yeah, we will miss this house, I must admit, when we eventually move and downsize.
You've got news for us, have you? Are you...
No news.
Okay.
Maybe so you're a carpenter, Darren, is that what you do for a living?
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we kind of, you know, but eventually we will because, you know the house will eventually just kind of get too big for us, really. But I suppose because we bought it as an absolute wreck and then built the extension on the side and then done everything to the house and then all of the outbuildings, you know, we've built again from scratch and, you know, obviously put all the electrics in and as you say, you know, like the summer house shed, whatever you want to call it, down the bottom of the garden, that's kind of got it's electric a and water and
yeah, the outbuildings.
You know, he's playing it down, isn't he?
The staff the wing.
No, I suppose because we've done it all, that's like if we had moved into the house, it wouldn't have had quite that personal connection. But because we've done it ourselves, it will be very difficult to leave one day. But one day we will, that's for sure.
Well, I'm in the planning stage of building a studio in the back. Because this house is pretty small, as you can see, it's a bit packed in there. I'm hoping to build a small studio. Whenever I watch Danson's videos, I always get jealous of his studio back there. You know, it's fancy wooden cabin.
Is this purely for YouTube then?
But I think we're going to build it so that we can put a small kitchen in there and a bathroom. Because eventually, you know, if I stop doing this, then we could rent it out as a holiday kind of cabin or whatever, you know.
Yeah.
You'll be one of the few people who can actually say, I'm just going to pop into my studio now and do a bit of things, because there's so many. This one of my massive bugbears. It's when you get people and they go, one of many, when they go, I'm just going to pop back into the studio, and you're like, that's your bedroom. That's your bedroom. Yeah, yeah. It's clearly your bedroom. I can see the bed. Do you know what I mean? It's like, it's not a studio.
I don't call this a studio. This is a bedroom that I've converted into a room to store my shit. You know, I mean, it's pretty small. I mean, the whole house is, we bought this house to rent out, and we rented out for a number of years. And then during COVID, I was staying here more and more. We had a problem with rats, so we had to turf our tenants out, and we pretty much gutted the whole place and did it all up. And I've just been staying here more and more. So now I live here permanently. And my mum and dad, they live right next door, and they're quite elderly. So, you know, it's good that way. But my partner, Karen, because of work, she has a house in Vancouver. So she travels back and forth every couple of weeks. And actually, it's been really good because we'll spend 2 weeks away from each other, and I actually really like it. It's been good. I think she likes it too. So we're not in each other's hair, you know.
Yeah,
I'll try that myself.
Oh, it's been great. I like it.
It works.
I got one cat here. It's good.
That's all we need. That's all we need.
Well, we have three, but we leave one here because, you know, she didn't want me to get lonely.
We're seeing the softer side here. We're seeing the softer side.
Yeah. Bloody cat.
So you never thought of a dog then? You talk about Nigel and Simon and people like that. You never thought of a dog?
Typical YouTube.
I like animals, but I'm not a huge lover of them. Dogs. We thought about it, but the problem is that whenever I go away quite often, and a lot of those places you're not allowed to bring dogs. So,
yeah,
you know. I've been out with Simon and Meg, and she's a handful.
Yeah. God, yeah. But she's also quite well behaved. Well, she seems to be on camera anyway. The way she perches herself up on the rocks.
Oh, I mean, she
sits there while he does his piece to camera.
Beautiful dog. I mean, Simon loves his dog, and he treats her so well. I like animals, but I'm not a huge lover of them. So I don't know if a dog would be a good thing for me or not.
Yeah, we were talking the other day because we lost one of our dogs. I don't know, it's supposed to be 4 months ago now, I suppose. And we often talk about, should we get another dog? Shan't we get another dog? I think we just made the decision that the dog has got to fit in with our lifestyle.
Yeah, yeah.
And when we got the two dogs, we lost the German Shepherd about 6 years ago, and then we lost a little Jack Russell, as I say, about 4 months ago. But we got them both together, so we had them for, I mean, he was about 14, but like 14 years ago, we just pretty much moved into this place, and as I said earlier, it was an absolute wreck. So when they was puppies and they was chewing, you know, the old furniture or the old skirting board, it really made no difference, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, you think now you've got a puppy now. And we put it in the motorhome, and we went out for a couple of hours, come back, and that motorhome's destroyed, you know. I just think the dog's got to fit in with us, and at the moment we're not we're not ready for another dog. That's
I went. I was going to say a number of years ago, I went on a trip up in northern British Columbia. We went on a horseback riding trip, and the guy that we went with, he was a real cowboy. Like, they lived in the middle of bloody nowhere. They had no running water, no electricity, and he was his guide. But he had this brilliant dog. It was just a little thing like this, but that thing, just amazing. And I thought, man, if I have a dog, I want a dog like that. It just, it, you didn't have to tell it to do anything. It just knew. It'd look at him and it knew exactly what it had to do, you know. It was a working dog. So. Yeah.
My experience of dogs is not that. They don't tend to do that. They don't tend to do it. How's your dog, Dave? How's your furniture, more importantly?
Oh, it's fine. She's growing up now.
Yeah.
She's the trouble is we haven't been able to get her spayed because the vets have stopped operating, so she's currently in her second season. We're having to fight the boy dogs off with a shitty stick.
Oh, dear. And I think, actually, on that... On that, I think we'll call it a day. I just don't know.
The shitty stick.
Yeah, I've got nowhere else to go. And once you know, once you start bringing in the shitty stick, there's nowhere else to go.
Yeah, so, the shitty stick.
Yeah. So thank you so much for watching. Thank you so much, Adam, for coming on. We really
you're welcome.
Adam.
My pleasure.
It's been,
thank
it's
you.
Been brilliant.
You.
And,
yeah, thanks for coming back so long after the first time you joined.
We genuinely appreciate that because, you know, it must have been difficult.
You was wearing that T-shirt last time.
No, you didn't wash. It don't wash, does it?
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, you were.
Maisha. I don't think
it's the same length, too. Next time it'll be down here.
It's amazing how you cut it. Like to match up. It's brilliant. Yeah. So, anyway, thank you. Thanks for coming on, mate. Really appreciate it. It's been brilliant. We would love to have you on again at some point.
No problem. I'd love to.
Excellent. So, thanks for watching, everybody. Hope you're having a lovely May. enjoying the warmth. And we'll all see you next time. Goodbye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Cool. Thank you. Thanks, Adam. I really appreciate that.
Oh, thanks. No, it's been great. Yeah. Oh, it's just like chatting with a bunch of friends, you know?